So the story opens with the king settling his accounts. And immediately we know we're talking about more than just money here. The slave is indebted to the king 10,000 talents. So just to give you some context, one talent is about how much a skilled laborer makes in 20 years. So the slave owes the king however much a skilled laborer would make in 200,000 years. So when you estimate, well, how much does a plumber or an electrician make in 200,000 years? I don't know, I'm estimating 50,000 a year, give or take. So that's about $10 billion. So the slave owes $10 billion to the king. And immediately we have questions here. What did the slave need the money for? What did the slave do with the $10 billion? Why would the king lend this slave $10 billion? Yeah. And the biggest question here is, what's going on? Jesus uses hyperbole to make the king's forgiving of the debt even more remarkable. It implies that what the king has given is something that really can't be repaid. It's a sum that's beyond many of our comprehension, and it's just wiped away with a hand wave. The servant, called the unforgiving servant, lives up to his traditional title when another slave asks for mercy and uses the same words as the first slave. Be patient with me, I'll pay it back. The first slave refuses to forgive the debt of 100 denarii. This, while still a large sum, is one that's a little more understandable. We can imagine someone getting into debt this much. The unmerciful slave, he's not demanding $5 back, but something in line with $10,000 to $20,000 back. Not an unsubstantial sum. If someone owed me $10,000 or $20,000, I'd probably want them to pay it back. But the king hears about this. He calls in the slave and chews him out. I canceled your debts because you asked, and you don't do the same? He hands him over to his jailers, who torture him until he can pay the money back. The story isn't clear about how long that takes or if it's even possible to make billions of dollars to pay back while you're being tortured. And then Jesus ends the story with, that's how God will treat you unless you forgive everyone in your heart. And that's a bit awkward. Kind of left on a bit of a downer. It seems like a bit of a paradox. God is super forgiving and merciful unless you aren't, in which case you're tortured. Something seems askew there. So what's Jesus presenting us with here? Because I don't think it's forgive or else. I think something else is going on here. It's not a check forgiving off your list so you can get on God's good side and God will forgive you. It's not something that we do just to kind of trick God into forgiving us. I remember when I was in high school, and shocker, I wasn't the coolest kid in school. I was small. I was a late bloomer. I was nerdy. I never went to my locker. I just carried all my books around in a massive backpack, which explains my posture. I never really got great grades to compensate for all of this. I remember one night I was at home and I'd fallen asleep on the couch, and I woke up and I heard my parents and my older sister talking. And they were talking about me, so obviously I pretended to be asleep. I listened in. And my parents asked what people at school thought of me, and my sister, who was much more popular than I, answered honestly. They see him. He's a bit small. He carries that big backpack. They think he's kind of nerdy. Well, I was so mad at my sister. And to give her credit, she wasn't saying anything to be mean. She was just speaking the truth. And if I'm even more honest, this conversation with my parents actually started because I'd said something mean about Steph to my parents that wasn't true at all. But in my ninth grade mind, I was the horribly wronged party here. And I let Steph know it. The next day, I told her I'd heard everything. She apologized and said she hadn't said anything with the intent of hurting me. And, you know, did I forgive her? And my response was, I'm a Christian, so I guess I have to. I always remember that. She said, well, don't do me any favors, because I don't think that's what the point is. But talk about not understanding what forgiveness is. And this mindset, it's an obligation. It's a burden. Well, I guess I better. Oh. And I don't think that's what Jesus is getting at here. In a sermon on this passage, which inspired my own today, Barbara Brown Taylor emphasizes that she just doesn't think the servant gets it. That at the heart of this story, the servant just doesn't get it. He never understood the grace he was being given when the king forgave his debts. He thought he was getting away with one. He thought he was pulling a fast one on the king. He thought he was getting the debt lifted because of something that he'd done. He didn't experience the grace of it. He only experienced his own entitlement. So what happens next? Without an awareness of grace, how much can he possibly offer? Well, he can't. He has no sense of the grace that he's received, and so he becomes someone who has none to give. This isn't a story about forgiving or else. This is a story about how grace comes from somewhere beyond us. How our experience of grace is reflected not just in how we offer it, but whether we offer it. It's a story to remind us that if we don't know grace, if we don't recognize it, well, we'll never offer it. And if we never offer it, our lives will be damned, not in the going to hell sense, but in the sense that every relationship that we're in will be corrupted. It'll have some invisible force, some past wrong, some baggage blocking any depth to it. When someone owes us something, when someone is indebted to us, immediately that serves as a block to a deeper relationship. Our relationships, they become stunted. We become isolated. This is the torture that awaits when we don't know grace. Grace and forgiveness, they're not frivolous. They're not mandates that force those who have been wronged to let the wrongdoer off the hook. They're not burdens that make us say anything and everything is okay. They're not obligations put on us by a judgmental creator. They're gifts that we as the church are invited to recognize. The grace we are offered is beyond anything any of us can repay. The servant owed billions of dollars. That's a ridiculous amount. But it's not ridiculous to accept that all of us, in some way, are indebted with fortune beyond anything we can repay. Here in Canada, few of us did anything to be born with one of the greatest steps up on the rest of the world, and that's our citizenship. That offers us so much that many of us did absolutely nothing for. But beyond that, none of us did anything to be born on earth, an earth which sustains us, which nourishes us, which gives us freely air to breathe and water to drink. None of us did anything to be born at all. This is grace. The very fact that we have lives is grace. It can't be repaid. We are created beings, created by one who knew that we could not pay back the debt owed by our very createdness. We are created by a God who expected nothing in return other than the hope that we would recognize what a gift we had been given, and that we would share that gift with the whole of creation. This is the heart of what grace is. And it's the heart of who we are as a church. Thanks be to God. Amen.